Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for February 5th, 2023. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is Wrestling Night in America, where we talk the big shows in pro wrestling. Just a couple plugs right at the outset here. Next Sunday is the Super Bowl, and for longtime listeners of this podcast, you know that I am not foolhardy enough to try to go head-to-head with the Super Bowl, so we'll probably go, I would guess, around 2 or 3 o'clock Eastern time next Sunday. So make sure you're plugged into my Twitter feed at Greg M. Parks. And we'll give you the lowdown on what time exactly we figure. I'll have to consult with the co-host that weekend and find a time that we can agree on prior to the Super Bowl festivities beginning. So it'll be a little different time next weekend as we preview the upcoming Elimination Chamber PLE. I also want to get in a plug for my appearance on the flagship. I hosted for our Torch editor, Wade Keller, and I was joined by Rich Fan, PW Torch columnist, who had a really good time talking wrestling with and catching up on the latest news about the Royal Rumble and the Bloodline storyline, AEW, and things like that. So that was on Thursday. So if you're a subscriber to PWTorch.com, you can get the ad-free version. PWTorch.com/GoVIP is where you can go to sign up. So I had a really good time talking wrestling with him, and I hope you check out that as well. Right now, I bring aboard my co-host for today, and it is PWTorch.com contributor and NXT expert Nate Lindberg to help me walk through the NXT Vengeance Day show from last night. Nate, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
It helps if I unmute myself.
Hello, Nate.
Greg,
there you go.
There we go. Greg, you don't think you could put on like a Wrestling Night in America halftime show or something like that? I don't know. You might be able to compete there.
That would be tempting. That would be tempting. My worry is we'd get so many calls that it would actually, for as long as the halftime show is, it might even run into the second half. So I just like to try to avoid it altogether if I can.
I can't say that I blame you. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I'm part of the PWT Talks NXT crew here on the Daily Cast. We basically go live right after NXT goes off the air, about a half hour after NXT goes off the air. Take your calls, emails, and talk NXT. I also write the NXT hits and misses on pwtorch.com, and I've got one up for Vengeance Day. So you may have already read that and kind of have a couple ideas of what I thought about it. And also, Kelly Wells, Bruce Hazelwood, and I recorded a VIP roundtable last night right after Vengeance Day, so you can check that out if you're VIP as well.
Wonderful. Glad you're able to catch up, folks, on what you're doing here at the Torch. I have so many great contributors. Always like to give them the spotlight here to get folks to check out their work beyond what they hear here on Wrestling Night in America. Nate, let's dive into Vengeance Day. If you want to get on the phones, we've got a couple callers. We've got tons of emails to get through, actually. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send your emails. But Vengeance Day, you know, this was a very unique show, Nate, because it was the first since the pandemic in 2020 that was held outside of the Performance Center. And I think there were a lot of people both internally within WWE and the NXT brand specifically, of course, as well as people outside the brand who really wanted to see how a lot of these wrestlers would do outside of that normal, familiar setting that they've been wrestling in for the last few years. This was held in Charlotte. Looked like a pretty good crowd. And, I mean, what did you think of the decision now to start moving these shows outside of the Performance Center? Is it overdue? Is it, you know, just the right timing? How do you assess NXT's decision to travel for this show? And I'm assuming, you know, they didn't completely bomb attendance-wise, so I would assume that future major events could be taking place outside the Performance Center as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is probably a good time. It might be a little bit overdue, quite frankly. I mean, NXT has been on the upswing, especially since dropping the 2.0 from the name. The NXT 2.0 era was weird. I didn't hate it, but it was certainly weird. I don't think that really would have drawn very well if it went back, you know, if that was out on the road at that time. But now, you know, especially where there are so many, we've got so many polished talents on the NXT roster right now. I mean, you know, Carmelo Hayes, Grayson Waller, for example, Pretty Deadly, all names that spring to mind just off the top of my head. It's kind of becoming a must-watch wrestling show again, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, it's still a far cry from, you know, the black and gold of like 2020, but it's getting there. It's getting there. I think yeah. the crowd was a very good litmus test here for a lot of the wrestlers here. You know, I'm sure we'll get into it, but like, you know, for example, you know, Bron Breakker, the crowd was not necessarily behind him. You know, there was a lot of chance for Grayson Waller, Bron Breakker's entrance. He got a pop, but it wasn't nearly what it was. What I expected, but I'm sure it's not what, you know, they were hoping for. So, but anyway, yeah, that's kind of where I'm thinking about, you know, the live touring. I'm hoping they continue doing these. Maybe not for every PLE that they do, because they're starting to do them maybe like every 4 to 6 weeks or so. But, you know, maybe a few of the big ones, you know, like Stand and Deliver. I think that should be, you know, outside of the CWC, if they're still even, I think they're still calling it that, but the Performance Center. You know, yeah, we'll see where it leads. See where it goes.
Yeah. And I do have a couple crowd reactions specifically that stood out to me that we'll talk about as we go through the card here. And we start with the opener, Wes Lee over Dijak to retain the North American Championship. This was probably the best match on the show, seemed to be the most heated match on the show in terms of crowd reaction, and they really let it all hang out here. I mean, this was, I hearken back to a lot of times when we go over the Impact pay-per-views. They have a certain opener that they always start with. It's the X Division. It's to get the crowd pumped. It's just the kind of the nonstop action. This wasn't in the same vein 100%, but I do feel like NXT took its cues from that philosophy to just let these guys go out there, let it all hang out, do some huge moves that you wouldn't normally see on an NXT show, even a PLE, and they had the crowd behind him, and Wes Lee was a big fan, he had a lot of big fans in the crowd, and he retains here over Dijak. I want to ask you about Dijak and his gimmick, because in certain circles of social media, Triple H has a reputation, and I don't know how much you can attribute characters in NXT to Triple H's vision, since he's got bigger fish to fry on the main roster. But Dijak is sort of in that vein of the Triple H dark, brooding characters. Think Karrion Kross. I mean, even Dijak's entrance was black and white like Karrion Kross is on the main roster. And, you know, Triple H, I think, is much higher on Karrion Kross than the general population of fans. And I think that's one of the rare occasions where the online fans and Vince McMahon's taste have actually lined up with Karrion Kross, because it didn't seem like either group was a fan of Kross. And then Triple H gets the pencil, and here comes Karrion Kross back in a major spot. So Dijak is that character right now in NXT. Just doesn't seem to fit him. I don't know what's missing there. It just seems forced. I know, you know, when he was previously in NXT, having those battles with Keith Lee and stuff like that, he didn't have as clear of a character as he does now, but I think that was better off. I think Dijak playing a character just doesn't really work for me. I just like be himself, you know? So talk a little bit about your impressions of the match. Did you think it was match of the night, and what you've seen out of Dijak's character so far?
So as far as Dijak goes, Dijak's somebody that, I mean, I he started his career up here in my area. So I've seen him on the indies even before, I think it was even before he hit Ring of Honor. He's a phenomenal talent as far as I'm concerned. The dark brooding character that he's kind of portraying right now, I like the character in theory. But there is something there that I feel like is missing. I don't know if it's like his delivery. I know part of it, some of his delivery in some of his promos. He feels like on PWT Talks NXT, we've kind of called him an 80s movie villain, especially where he does like the backstage interviews, you know, or not backstage, but it's like the detective style interviews with some of his opponents and things like that. There is something missing there. I'm not sure what exactly it is, but I know, you know, his delivery on some of his dialogue is certainly part of it. As far as him actually portraying the character, like in the ring, I'm okay with it. I feel like maybe it is a little bit forced too. He may just be kind of trying to find his stride still. I'm kind of giving it a little bit more time to breathe, but not a whole heck of a lot more. He's a good talent. This match itself, WWE, they do a pretty good job of like the big man, little man match. And I thought this was a fantastic example of that. It's certainly match of the night as far as I'm concerned. And I was really expecting Mello and Cruz to be match of the night, at least in my eyes anyway. It was my second favorite of the night, but this clinched it. I usually don't like matches where there are a lot of like false finishes and things like that. I'd say by rule of thumb anyway, I just kind of feel like it just moves too fast. I like a little bit more psychology, but this was great. There were a lot of false finishes where you thought Dijak had Wes Lee, and all it was doing is just playing up the heart of Wes Lee and how, you know, how determined he is to win and hold on to the North American title. I thought it was excellent storytelling. They had me on the edge of my seat the whole time. I really, really enjoyed this match.
Yeah, it was really good. And like you said, match of the night, I think most people would agree with that. So, you know, Wes Lee retains the North American Championship, and we'll see where that goes this week on NXT on Tuesday night. The second match was Fallon Henley and Kiana James defeating Katana Chance and Caden Carter to win the NXT Women's Tag Team titles. This is your standard women who don't get along, but with a little bit of a twist because now they get along. And so that was kind of cool to see develop. Fallon Henley has really opened my eyes that she did really well here. And really, you know, all four women, I thought, rose to the occasion in this match and really delivered a pretty solid 10-minute match. And there are things that could have gone wrong with this combination. You know, you don't have a ring general in there to kind of hold things together and stuff like that. But I think if I had to give a surprise of the night, this would be it. And maybe that's my own low expectations. But Fallon Henley and Kiana James, tag team champions, all is right in the world of Briggs and Jensen and Henley and James, at least for now. So do you see that storyline continuing with them just, you know, they're friends now and they're going to be able to get along? Or do you see this as kind of like a stopover in this storyline where eventually something happened and Kiana James goes back heel?
That's kind of what I'm thinking. I don't know how long they're going to play that out, but especially with a backstory, you know, where, you know, Kiana James was trying to swoop in and steal her family's business and things like that. It's, I don't know. I feel like there's more there that they sort of paid it off, but it really wasn't super satisfying. So I feel like if they're going to go full bore with this and you know, put the titles on them. You know, they're probably going to give it a little bit more time. I mean, they seem to be, and they being like NXT management, they seem to be really high on Briggs and Jensen, as well as Henley and Kiana James. I think we're going to see them on TV, you know, quite a bit, and see the story play out a little bit more before we see a heel turn by, you know, presumably Kiana James. Be interesting to see one from Fallon Henley, but it certainly could happen too. But, you know, see something from Kiana James and kind of, you know, see the team implode. Fallon Henley certainly impressed me over the past, you know, handful of months. You know, when she first debuted, not so much, but she really fell into her character. I feel like her in-ring work is certainly improved, you know, at least over the last year or so. And Kiana James, I really got to give her some credit. I mean, I always struggle in the name. It was the Iron Survival Challenge match, where it was, you know, that, yeah, I think that was the name of it. She had an excellent performance there, and like Kelly Bruce and I were actually blown away, and that match.
I remember
really,
that. I felt the same way. Yeah.
Yeah, it really changed our perception of Kiana James, and I'm really excited to see what this opportunity leads for her or means for her. I don't know if she's necessarily ready to be like main event level, but she's taken this gimmick that's kind of bland and I feel like it's more like an evil Miss Hancock or something. And she kind of made it her own and made it work. So I'm really high on her, and I'm happy to see her in the spot. I'm a little disappointed to see Casey Catanzaro. The whole Katana Chance thing, it'll stick someday. Katana Chance and Casey Katana Chance and Caden Carter. Wow,
it's a mouthful.
A little disappointed.
It is.
It is the KC gang, as sometimes I've shortened it to for that reason. It's a little disappointing to see them lose it. I mean, they did just get the they're now the record holders of the longest reigning women's tag team champions across the board in WWE, main roster and NXT included. So that was a bit of a tell that they might lose the belts here, but I thought it would be cool to maybe like see that reign get extended a bit more. I think they deserve it, but hey, I'm cool with the way they went, and I'm interested to see where this leads, especially for, like I said, for Kiana James.
If you're going to lose the title, there are worse places to lose it than on a major event in front for the first time in front of audience in 3 years.
Yes.
So that's
very true.
If you're going to lose it, that's the way to do it. The third match was Carmelo Hayes defeating Apollo Crews in a 2 out of 3 falls match. And they won, Carmelo Hayes won 2-0. The former Dabba Kato came out at Apollo Crews' former Commander Aziz in the gimmick that Apollo Crews has kind of sworn off in his NXT run, came out and played a part in the end, and then attacked Apollo Crews after the match. So I know you said earlier this was your second favorite match. I was a little disappointed by this. I thought it was a lot. It took a while to get going, a lot more than I expected it to. Especially, you know, this wasn't like a cool down spot or anything like that either. So I don't think that was it. And somebody like Carmelo Hayes, with the ceiling he has and with the role that he played at the end of the show, I understand why they did the 2-0. I mean, you know, when you're about to challenge, that's how it appears, when you're about to challenge a long reigning champion like Bron Breakker, who has been portrayed as basically unstoppable, it helps to get some momentum heading into that. And I think taking out Crews 2-0 will give him that momentum. So talk about what you liked about the match, and then the appearance of Commander Aziz. You know, Trick Williams kind of felt like he wasn't getting the job done there during the match. I don't know if this was, you know, Carmelo Hayes hiring Commander Aziz as backup and maybe he's going to ditch Trick Williams, or if this was Commander Aziz coming out and doing this on his own because of dissatisfaction with how things ended on the main roster with Apollo Crews. So a lot to sort through with that relationship as well.
Yeah, so this may have been my second favorite match of the night, but that's not necessarily a good thing, which kind of speaks for how I felt about the rest of the show after the opener. They weren't necessarily misses. You know, I didn't necessarily give them misses and hits and misses, but it was the rest of them were everything else was kind of a bit of a disappointment for me. What I did like about the match was just the athleticism. You've got two incredible talents in the ring. So, I mean, they were able to do some fun spots and that was interesting. And that was fun. Plus one of my favorite moves is the crossface, and it gets a lot of hate now, especially because of, you know, the man who made it famous and his actions, later in life. But I love that move. And the fact that, you know, we did see Carmelo Hayes win with that move, that I gave that two thumbs up. Then, like, you know, you were talking about too, Carmelo Hayes, he's coming in, you know, and we'll talk about it when we get there in the main event, but it looks like he's the next contender for Bron Breakker, which obviously I think makes sense. So I think this is a solid, a solid win for him. You know, 2-0 and an Ironman, or not Ironman, 2 out of 3 falls rather. It definitely makes him look strong. It's a bit of a fall from grace, I feel like, for Apollo Crews. He comes into NXT and he's like, okay, you know, the one thing I never got was the NXT title. I'm here to get the title. And then he kind of floundered around doing some other stuff for a little while and finally made it up to the title picture, didn't capture the title. And now he looks like he's going to be in a program with Commander Aziz. I don't hate that idea either. I was a little bit higher on this whole, Dabba Kato thing than Kelly and Bruce were. Not by much, but a little bit. I think it's all going to depend on what Dabba Kato actually brings to the feud. I kind of like the idea that you're going full circle and coming back to an old storyline for some continuity. I applaud them for doing that. They don't do that all, you know, well, maybe a little more so than they used to, but you know what I mean? So I'm cool with that, but I don't know where this is necessarily going to go. Like you said, it was kind of confusing, and I think it's by design as to why he was out there. The way that I took it was he was either hired by Apollo Crews or did it on his own to make it look like he was out there to save Apollo Crews and turned on him last minute. Why? We don't know. We'll probably find out on Tuesday. But that was kind of the way that I took it. I'm interested to see how this plays out. Like I said, because just the continuity and everything, but I'm not high that it's going to actually be a good angle. Let's put it that way.
Right. No, I definitely get you there. And you're right, Apollo Crews, I mean, it is a bit of a fall from grace, so we'll see if they try to do anything to build him back up here in the coming weeks. Just to kind of reset things here as we're approaching the bottom of the hour, Greg Parks and Nate Lindberg here on Wrestling Night in America, talking NXT Vengeance Day. Glad to have you along with us here on February, whatever it is, 5th, 2023. We'll head to the phones now and take our first phone call. It's the 814 area code. It's Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's your first question for us?
Questions on Bron Breakker. Who could you see replacing him as the top babyface once he loses the championship and goes on to WWE? Do you see them signing like a better second-generation wrestler like Bill Goldberg's son, or maybe turn a heel babyface in NXT, or move someone, you know, down to NXT to fill that void?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know that there's anyone on the roster right now who screams to me someone to replace Breakker as the top star. And, you know, you've also got to take into account that could be many months, even a year down the line. And so who's even going to be in charge of WWE creatively at that point? Is Vince going to take back over and sort of reinstall what he wanted NXT to be? I think it's a lot of it is the same, but you know, once Bron Breakker leaves, if Triple H is still in charge, you know, does Triple H go back to sort of the independent wrestling model where he brings guys in from the indies? We know he's back scouting that, signing guys and things like that. So, you know, what is the philosophy of NXT at the time that Bron Breakker gets promoted? I think that's one thing you have to take into account. I mean, to be honest with you, I could see Carmelo Hayes as a top babyface. And you could make the argument that, well, you know, whenever Bron Breakker goes up, Carmelo Hayes probably isn't going to be that far behind. So, and Hayes may even be promoted before Breakker. But as good a job as Hayes has done as a heel, Nate, I see him performing just as admirably as a babyface. And I could see him taking over the mantle for Bron Breakker. Is there anyone I'm missing there in NXT who just you feel like is ready to take that spot right now?
Not really, no. And it's, you know, like I would love to see Bron Breakker turn heel, maybe on the main roster, but, you know, well, that's a whole other topic in and of itself, really. But no, there's really not anybody on the NXT roster that I feel like is ready to step up and kind of be the baby face and kind of the face of NXT. I feel like Wes Lee, maybe, and that's a stretch. Kind of first name comes to mind. But he's you know,
yeah.
very charismatic.
I thought about him too, but think he's just not – not the kind of guy size-wise or anything like that that, you know, WWE has historically built around.
No, exactly. And there's still something about the character. I don't know if it's the character or the performer necessarily, but that doesn't necessarily scream like main event to me. North American champion, great, but I feel like that's kind of his ceiling, at least in this kind of incarnation of the character. So I'm kind of right there with you. But there's, like I said, there's really nobody else that comes to mind. When in doubt, there's always Dante Chen. That's what Bruce always says. It's Dante Chen. But yeah,
I'm gonna put you down for Dante Chen then as your prediction.
Okay, sounds good. I'm good with that.
All right, Ryan, back to you for your second question for us.
I have a question on AEW. Shane Strickland's been doing an angle where he's picking on second generation wrestlers. Do you see anyone being brought in for this, say, Davey Boy Smith Jr. maybe, or someone that's obscure like Bobby Eaton's son or Bobby Fulton's son? Any like names that you could possibly be seeing brought in for that?
It does feel like AEW has enough second generation wrestlers to fill out this feud to the point where they don't need to bring in any extra. I think Davey Boy Smith Jr. is really interesting. I think there's some name recognition there from his run in WWE. You know, WWE had him under contract before and didn't use him at all on television and then released him. So I think he would be really interesting. But again, I think AEW has enough second-generation wrestlers to fill out this feud. I don't think this is going to be a 6-month feud or anything like that where you just need to keep compiling second generation wrestlers. So I don't think you'd need that deep of a bench to use for this feud. So I think what AEW has right now is probably going to be enough, Nate.
I'll be honest, I haven't been keeping up with AEW as much, so I really don't have a dog in the fight.
Okay, fair enough. Ryan, back to you for your third and final question for us.
Final question is on Leaping Lanny Poffo. Do you know why he was able to beat Hulk Hogan by countout? I know, like, Macho Man also beat Hulk Hogan by countout on, like, a lesser station. I believe it was the MSG channel. And is that because Hogan liked giving, like, the underdog a victory? Because I know he jobbed to Billy Kidman and Arn Anderson in WCW, or is there a different reason? Why? Because they never really followed up. I don't think Genius ever got a title shot.
No, and I think that, I mean, that was a very famous win for Lanny Poffo. And I'm not, I think, I feel like there was a story behind the why. I just can't, I'd have to go back in, like, the Observer archives to get it. And I'm sure Dave will probably touch on that in the Lanny Poffo obituary when it comes out in the next newsletter. But I don't remember specifically offhand what the story was. You know, what truly, Nate, one of the best interviews that Wade Keller has done here at the Torch Talk with Lanny Poffo. Just Lanny was a fascinating guy. And you know, for those who don't know, he passed away earlier this week, but you know, his interview with Wade, as well as the picture of him that goes around the internet where he's laying in bed and the TV is hanging from the ceiling at just the perfect angle. Like, those are my,
yep,
those are my lasting memories of post-wrestling Lanny Poffo. I don't know if you have any memories or thoughts on Lanny Poffo's passing.
I'll be honest. His stardom was before my my time as a wrestling fan. I haven't seen a whole heck of a lot of his work, but it, obviously it's sad to see a legend pass, and especially as young as he was. But I also need to seek out that interview with him and Wade, because I did not know that existed. And from what I do know, he was a very, very interesting person. So it'd be interesting to see how Wade was able to kind of dig in there.
All right, Ryan, thanks for the phone call this week.
Thanks for answering the questions.
Absolutely. Let's go back to the Vengeance Day card here and finish things out with our final three matches here, Nate. Gallus is your new NXT Tag Team Champions, defeating New Day, Pretty Deadly, and Chase U to win the NXT tag titles. New Day obviously was always going to be short-term champions. Their win was a surprise, a pleasant surprise. Gallus now as the tag team champions. But, you know, earlier we talked about crowd reactions. Chase U got a pretty solid reaction from this crowd. And inside the Performance Center, you know that Chase U is over. But that's one of those gimmicks where you just don't know how it's going to play outside that same 75 to 100 people that show up every week for the tapings. They seem pretty over here on this show. Is it the gimmick? Is it just, it's a very easy, you know, the Chase U chance, and it's a very chantable and very interactive gimmick that gets the crowd into it. Is that a big part of it? Is there something charming about Andre Chase where he, you know, seems to have this deal where he just yells and spits obscenities at students? Like, what do you attribute Chase U's reaction to from this particular crowd that seemed to be on board with them in the same way that the folks at the Performance Center are?
So when Andre Chase and Chase U kind of first became a thing, I rolled my eyes so hard they hit the back of my head. I did not think this was going to go anywhere. I thought it was going to fall flat on its face. And then he started gaining some popularity, and he even started to win me over with, his crazy antics and kind of his the over the top yelling and swearing. It was funny. He's got some great timing. And then the addition for me of Thea Hale was what cemented me as a Chase U fan. Some people think Thea Hale way over the top. I think she gets it. And her character is supposed to be way over the top.
Exactly.
I think she acts. Yeah, so I love it. Like, anytime she's on TV, I'm hooked in. So I think it's kind of a combination of the characters and the personalities, as well as, like, you were talking about, everything is very interactive, very chantable. There's the Chase U section, so fans can wear their Chase U shirts too and be part of the Chase U section. Things like that. I'm surprised that it took off the way it did, but sometimes it's the stupidest gimmicks that wind up being, massive hits with the crowd. I don't know what their ceiling really is. You know, we were talking about this a lot last night on the VIP roundtable. You know, Chase U, their job is to be the hype man and then lose. You know, they're there to get the reaction out of the crowd and then, you know, stare at the lights. I don't know if they'll, you know, end up getting promoted to, you know, actually winning and you know, getting the titles or anything. I think it would kind of be nice because they do have that crowd reaction, but I don't want to see it for a while. Yeah, I'd like to see it a few months down the line. If Chase U doesn't disintegrate by then, depending on what Duke Hudson's been doing in the background, and you know we've seen videos and of him talking with other people, and hey, it's not like it doesn't look it's not what it looks like, and things like that. So we're not really sure if Duke Hudson's like really on board with Chase U or if he's really not. So kind of that's all you know. We'll see how that all plays out, but for the most part, like I think they're super entertaining. I'm glad to see them getting the reaction that they did get outside of the, you know, the Performance Center. I was curious to see that as well. And the reaction did kind of, did surprise me, not gonna lie. Greg, are you there? Oh, it looks like we did lose Greg, but, I just got a message from him on Twitter, but he's coming back. So, we'll get there. So I guess in the meantime, we can, we'll move on. We'll talk about the NXT Women's Championship. And then when Greg gets back, he can interrupt me and let me know he's back. But we had, Roxanne Perez versus Gigi Dolin versus JC Jane for the NXT Women's Championship. This was kind of an interesting match here because we saw Toxic Attraction, a team actually in a triple threat match. It's a little bit predictable as far as I'm concerned because, you know, we did see some shades of some issues between the members of Toxic Attraction leading up to this match. You know, part of it being a story where they were, you know, playing into it and trying to trick Roxanne Perez. But then there were some other miscommunications as well after that. I think even in the go home show leading up to this triple threat. This is very predictable. You know, they got in the way of each other. You know, Toxic Attraction could not work together. They tried, but their egos got the best of them. And that's basically, you know, how Roxanne Perez walked out of the match here. Glad to see her continue her reign. She had a very serendipitous win. So it would have been, I don't know, I think it would have been disappointing to see her lose so quickly. I don't think that either Gigi Dolin or JC Jane are really in they're really ready for a main event spot like that to actually hold the women's title. You know, Mandy Rose was really the glue that held Toxic Attraction together, and without her, I feel like the whole group is just less than. I think we do have Greg back.
I'm here. What did I miss?
All right. Okay. I started talking about the NXT Women's Championship match because I figured I'd fill some air. I'd fill some air here. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what happened. Skype just died on me, which does not happen very often. Not even the recorder. Yeah, I get the recorder that records the conversation that dies quite often, unfortunately. But this was actually Skype just took a nosedive. So thanks for taking over. Roxanne Perez and Gigi Dolin and JC Jane. I heard you say that without Mandy, the group kind of falls apart. I don't know if I agree 100%. I think she was the alpha, no doubt, and she was the leader, and without that, it does make the group feel less than. But I think they could still, as a tag team, be effective in the tag team division. Obviously, that was not the case here. One thing I did want to ask you, you know, going back to our discussion about the crowd reaction, is Gigi sure. Dolan was a lot more popular than JC Jane. And so it's always interesting to me when you've got two heels who are basically on even footing and the crowd clearly prefers one over the other. What do you attribute that to in this case?
I think it was 100% in 100% correct. Gigi Dolan she's just a better overall competitor. She's a little bit better than Jason Jane in the ring. They still have some room to grow, and that was very evident in this match when the two of them were facing one another and Roxanne Perez was out, like, not part of the match, outside of the ring. Very, very sloppy, it looked very choreographed. So there's that. But also Gigi Dolan, she's got a lot more charisma and she's a lot better on the mic than JC Jane. JC, she's getting better. She's a lot better than she was, even maybe like 2 months ago. And I think she had to kind of by necessity with Mandy leaving. But Gigi is she's the one that's always stood out to me, Bruce, Kelly, and Tom, actually. I think he was still on the show when they debuted. The four of us still talk in a Skype chat all the time. And, for months, it's been, Gigi Dolan is the one that stood out to us as well. JC, I think she definitely has what it takes, I think, to kind of be a solid heel. I don't really see her climbing up the card. Whereas Gigi Dolan, I think with a little bit more polish, I could see her climbing up the card. To circle back what you were talking about too, about them, being an effective tag team. Absolutely. I think they can certainly be an effective tag team moving up the card. What I kind of meant when I said they were like falling apart or whatever, part of it was that I was a little bit like, oh, what do? I got to cover for time. it's more that they feel a little less than without Mandy Rose. And to have them in the main event mix did not feel important. It didn't feel special. It makes sense because Toxic Attraction has been in the main event for so long, but it was really Mandy that was in the main event and Toxic Attraction were, I guess, for lack of a better term, riding the coattails. Like in the tag team division on the main roster, I think they could make a big impact, I think both women's rosters right now could probably use it.
And I think, to the discussion about the fans cheering Gigi Dolan, I think the other thing that I would add there is she just has a lot more unique look than JC Jane.
Yes.
And fans gravitate toward, people who are different and the orange hair and everything like that. I think that is also part and parcel of why the fans, at least in this arena, I don't want to generalize, but on this night, they seem to prefer Gigi over JC Jane. The main event of Bron Breakker versus Grayson Waller, steel cage match for the NXT championship. Bron Breakker walks out as champion. Did it feel like, this really was, Nate, the meeting of the number one babyface and the number one heel on NXT? I don't know that that's arguable. So did this match live up to that hype? Did it live up to seeing that? And then were you surprised that Breakker won so decisively? At Grayson Waller there at the end, gave two spears to him. There was no real shenanigans. There was nothing like that. I mean, Bron Breakker, picked up the victory and it seemed to hint that Carmelo Hayes could be next.
I certainly hope Carmelo Hayes is next. I'm so ready for the Bron Breakker era to be over. He's felt very stale for quite a while. I don't know if this necessarily – okay, let me back up. As far as it living up to the hype, I think it sort of did live up to the hype. One of the things with Bron Breakker's entire reign is like – you know, Kelly Bruce and I joke about this all the time, is if we're not actively thinking about who the NXT champion is, we don't remember who the NXT champion is. If it comes up in conversation sometimes, like, hey, it's Breaker. It hasn't been a very memorable run. The build up to this match, I think, was probably one of the best builds for a Bron Breakker match. And I think simply because Grayson Waller, Waller is such an annoying heel, and I hate him so much. And I love the fact that I hate him. He does his job so effectively. I think once he makes it up to the main roster, I feel like he's probably going to have like a Miz level ceiling. Maybe a token championship run or something like that. But he can talk. He's one of the better talkers in NXT. I think that's going to translate to the main roster, depending on who's going to be in charge of creative when he gets there. But assuming it's Triple H, I think he's going to flourish once he gets there. Bron Breakker, I understand. Once I started thinking a little bit more about this last night, because I really thought we were going to see Grayson Waller win. So did Bruce, so did Kelly. And I don't know if we were just a little, we're ready to see, you know, Bron Breakker's era end, or what. So we, maybe we're a little bit jaded, but the more I started thinking about it, the more it makes sense. I mean, Stand and Deliver, that's their WrestleMania. It's not Vengeance Day. So it doesn't really make sense to see, you know, their top champion. And I think they said last night on Vengeance Day that Breakker is now the longest reigning NXT champion of all time with his combined reigns, I think. So, you know, why make that, why have him lose on a, you know, granted, this was a big show. It's the first show that was in front of a live crowd, you know, since the pandemic, but it's not Stand and Deliver. So that kind of made sense to me once we got there. Carmelo Hayes, like I said, I hope to see him win the title here. You know, Kelly and Bruce they're more of the mindset that Carmelo Hayes has nothing left to do in NXT and he needs to go to the main roster. And I was more of the mindset of no, let him dethrone the longest reigning NXT champion of all time and use that as a bragging point, right? Let him be the face of the company, let him be on the merchandise and be on the advertising, get that exposure and go up to the main roster. And they're like, well, he should be making the main roster money. And I'm like, I can't disagree with that, but booking wise and everything, I think it makes sense. So I'm hoping to see Melo pick up the win over Bron Breakker at Stand and Deliver and take me out of this drab Breakker era.
Well, I will say you guys are not the only ones who thought that Grayson Waller was going to win Saturday night, which leads us into our first email, actually half of our first email question. This is from Eli. He says, hello, Greg and co-host. Haven't emailed in a bit, so I thought I'd make a comeback tonight. Question number one, I was so sure Grayson Waller would defeat Bron Breakker at Vengeance Day, but he did not. This was his third shot. He looks really ineffective, and I think Bron has gotten stale. Waller was the best challenge he's had so far with the mind games, but Bron still prevailed. What more could he do as champion? It looks like Carmelo Hayes is next, but it feels too little too late. So either Eli was kind of reading our minds, or maybe we somehow got a sneak peek at his email, but he hit on a lot of the points we just did, from thinking Waller was going to win to Waller looking ineffective, Bron getting stale. What more could he do as champion? So if you're NXT creative and you have decided, as they did last night, to keep the title on Bron Breakker, what do you do to keep fans interested in this title reign that, to I think a lot of people, has gotten stale? Is it just Carmelo Hayes and having him kind of, you know, be the guy? I mean, we have seen Carmelo Hayes versus Bron Breakker before. It's not necessarily new ground. He's probably maybe a little more primed now for a title shot, so there's that. But how do you go about making Bron Breakker and making this title reign still feel relevant?
So I think part of it is going to be Carmelo Hayes needing to do a lot of the work, similar to Grayson Waller here. But if it was me, and this is just, you know, armchair booking here, I'd give Bron Breakker some other dimension. He's a very two-dimensional character, right? He's you know, we were talking about this again last night on the VIP roundtable. Like, who is Bron Breakker? You know, there was a segment a couple weeks ago, it might have even been this past week, with Von Wagner and Mr. Stone, and Mr. Stone screaming at Von Wagner, like, who are you? I don't know who you are. You're just this big dude. You get angry, and who are you? And, you know, same thing we talked about with Seth Rollins years ago, and I feel like it's kind of the same thing about Bron Breakker. It's like, who are you outside of being a Steiner? And kind of having a lot of the same characteristics that your uncle and your father had. I feel like if he was around in the, like, 90s, you know, early 90s or late 80s or something like that, he probably would be a huge hit. But it just, in this day and age, he just feels, like I said, very two-dimensional. So I don't know what that edge would be, if it would be like almost a, and I hate to say a double turn, because Carmelo Hayes is such an awesome heel, but I think they could go to that well, you know, and swap the alignment, but that's kind of a stretch. Like I said earlier, I do want to see Bron Breakker as a heel. I think he could channel a lot of the criticisms that you know, we have about him, and use that as an effective, like, and kind of realistic heel. I'd love to see that happen, and I'm sure it probably will at some point, because most faces wind up turning heel. But that's kind of really it. I think for a lot of fans, it's kind of just we've got one more Bron Breakker match, we got one more title defense, and then we're done.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones. The 410 area code is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's on your mind for us?
Thank you for taking my call, Greg, and it's good to be able to discuss NXT Vengeance with you, Nate Lindberg.
Good to hear from you, Reverend.
I'm happy to say that I had all six match predictions correct, and I'm going to start from the beginning and give you the storytelling reasons why I could see them booking the show the way that they did. That first match was truly a banger. I think a lot of people were surprised to see Chris Dijak step up to the next level. And as I heard you emphatically state that you had witnessed Dijak on the independent scene even before Ring of Honor. And, you know, I was a witness to his progression in ROH, and he has really turned it up a notch. I did not see him winning the title simply because the whole story of Wes Lee, since they released his former tag partner, was to come back to show the world that he could make it on his own in spite of Zachary Wentz. And he's done an excellent job of you know, climbing up that ladder and showing everybody that he could make it, and he could also be more than a transitional champion. So that was the story of that match. I had a feeling that D'Angelo and Stax would interfere some kind of way, and that's what caused the momentary distraction. But it was a very athletic match, and as you guys said, it was match of the night. It was no surprise there. I think Wes will keep it for at least another month. I'm not sure who they're going to place in that position to be the next number one contender. It may even be Grayson Waller, for all we know, but they'll have somebody step up. Now, I was disappointed in that women's tag title match, because it looked like KC and Katana, they look like they've taken a step back, even though they claim to have been the longest reigning women's tag champs. But it looks like there were a lot of botches. They were stalling, waiting for the person to get in position. They just didn't look good at all. So, you know, I'm glad to see them drop the straps. Fallon and Kiana, I can see that story lasting a while. It's a hot story right now, but The interesting thing is, I'm waiting for them to bring it up on Tuesday night, Nate Lindberg, and I want you to comment on this. Kiana James interfered on the outside and held Katana Chance's feet down, so, and the referee didn't see it. So what are your thoughts on that, how they may transition into, you know, revealing that, you know, Kiana's cheating, and or healing, if you will, and the fact that Fallon wants to win, you know, with integrity?
I think that we're going to see that kind of come to a bit of a head on Tuesday. We talked about this a bit on the roundtable, and I kind of forgot about this when we were talking about it earlier, so I'm glad you brought it up. For exactly, the reasons you said, Kiana James is doing some heel moves here, Henley is not going to like that. I think on Tuesday, we're probably going to either see Henley witness like a replay of what happened for the first time, or, she would have already seen it. Maybe there'll be some Twitter thing or something. I don't know, social media thing. But I think by Tuesday, she's going to, have an idea of what happened and not going to be super happy about it. I don't know if that's going to lead to, the feud between the two of them kind of rehashing right away, or, if maybe Fallon Henley will be like, okay, well, I'll forgive you this time, but next time, let's not be doing that, and, kind of continue the feud out. That's kind of how I see it happening is, Henley is going to not be super happy about it, but going to forgive her to kind of keep the peace, and Kiana James is probably going to keep, keep healing it up, as you said, Keith, and eventually something's going to come to a head, and we'll see either they'll lose the titles over it, or maybe we'll see the two champions face one another, then they get stripped of the titles or something. We'll see where it goes.
I think it wouldn't surprise me if Henley saw that and insisted on giving the former champions a rematch as sort of an attempt to make good for what happened. That could be what happens next. And I think you also mentioned something important there is it's not just Fallon Henley and Kiana James who are embroiled in the storyline. I mean, Briggs and Jensen are there too, and they play an important role as well. So Henley has to know if she rocks the boat, it's not only going to affect her and her tag partner, it's also going to affect her relationship with Briggs and Jensen, Jensen having a crush on Kiana James. So it's something they'll have to play, or Henley will have to play very smartly so as to not upset anyone right now, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Reverend Keith, we'll go back to you for your next question, or if you want to continue to run through the card there.
Yes, I just wanted to go back to the card again. As you guys alluded to, the Apollo Crews-Carmelo Hayes match was fine for what it was. However, you didn't realize until the end of the show itself why they had booked Carmelo so strongly, which I'm in total agreement of. I knew going in that Grayson Waller wasn't going to be the one to dethrone Braun simply because he's a developmental Miz, in my opinion, and I may come under scrutiny for saying that, but, he's a very good wrestler, very charismatic, can get the heel heat, but at the same token, he's not someone, gentlemen, that I feel can carry a brand, and especially not for any length of time. Whereas Carmelo Hayes, he has the charisma, he has an excellent body, he has a good body of work, he's athletic. He proved himself long before Triple H and Vince saw him on the independent scene as Christian Casanova. So now, even without Trick, he can carry that brand, and I'm expecting him to do so at Stand and Deliver. What are your thoughts on my comment?
Yeah, I agree. I think, I suggested it earlier that Carmelo Hayes has the potential to be the top babyface of the brand if and when Bron Breakker gets promoted, and certainly, even as a heel, he's done such a good job that if it's not Grayson Waller, then when you look up and down the NXT roster, maybe it's a Tyler Bate. Maybe it's one of the guys who came from NXT UK that you could make the argument.
Tyler
to
Bate is somebody
Bron
that I was
Breakker.
Thinking of.
Yeah. I mean, he's as a top babyface, I don't know, but as someone who could beat Bron Breakker, I think he's got to be in the conversation. But, you throw out Grayson Waller, who's basically done after this, and there's just simply not a lot of options, I don't think, aside from Carmelo Hayes.
No, I agree. I mean, there's, we talked about it a bit earlier tonight. Tyler Bate is somebody that came to mind, but I didn't bring it up at the time because it's like he's, yes, former NXT UK champion, but I don't feel like he's what they're looking for in NXT. I think maybe he could be a transitional champion if they really needed him to be. But I think that's a bit of a stretch for me. Carmelo Hayes, he's probably my favorite talent on NXT right now, and has been for a while. I have done a complete 180 on Carmelo. When he first debuted, I didn't necessarily like what I saw, but I saw something in him. And I could, like, when they started to kind of push him a little bit, even before this whole current incarnation of Carmelo Hayes, because he was just a plain babyface on NXT 2.0 before NXT 2.0. He was just really like this very plain babyface. And once he started to develop and then 2.0 hit and he debuted this character, it was like, holy crap, he gets it. He understands it. He was already, good in the ring. And it wasn't his in-ring work that I didn't like. It was the character work. I probably should have specified that. The character work just wasn't there. But once he developed this character, he took off. So I think he could certainly be the face of the brand for a little while. Grayson Waller, Keith, you're not going to take any flack from me for calling him, kind of comparing him to The Miz. I did that a little bit earlier in the show myself. I feel like Grayson Waller's ceiling is The Miz, and that's not a bad thing. If you can be The Miz, be The Miz. You're going to have a great career. You're going to make a lot of money. So go for it. But I don't see him being like a long-term champion, maybe getting a token reign here and there. Like a token reign like The Miz did. Actually, I guess he did get two title reigns, didn't he? But I don't think he's ever going to be, a major contender, like a Roman Reigns or anything like that.
Reverend Keith, back to you.
My final point of the night, I want to say that Bron Breakker, he's very boring to me, very boring.
I'm sorry,
I love
the
it.
Way you put that. Was,
I love it.
Very succinct, I guess. It didn't dance around the topic at all.
No, he's very boring. I think he needs to work on character development and wrestling psychology from an in-ring standpoint. And I was noticing how Vic and Book during the match kept making references to his Steiner name, for example, with the Steiner line and with his mannerisms. I am hoping that this is a prelude, gentlemen, to them going back to his roots, his heritage. He is a Steiner. And we all, criticize the Bron Breakker name. It'd be nice if they could just call him Steiner. That's his name. So, but either way, he needs to work on his character development because his matches are hard to watch because it's like everything is so forced. Nothing seems natural with him. And then he doesn't really relate to the – and I think that's why a lot of the fans – kind of were pulling for Grayson Waller last night because at least Waller is very charismatic, and I'm almost certain that when Carmelo Hayes wrestles Braun, that the fans will root for Carmelo, and Nate, this will be the prelude to Carmelo's babyface run because Carmelo is money, no matter whether he's a heel or a face. He's money, and I think he could be the face of the NXT brand long before he gets called to the main. So that's what I wanted to mention. Hopefully Bron will work on his character. Chime in on that. Thanks for taking my call, gentlemen. Be blessed. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you, Reverend Keith. You do the same. I think there's two competing, not theories, but two opposite things that we need to talk about here, Nate, and one is the assumption that Bron Breakker is going to go to the main roster very soon, and then the statement that Bron Breakker just is missing something. So what's going to happen to him if he does get called up to the main roster before he finds whatever it is he's lacking in NXT? I mean, that's kind of not – it's doing him a disservice, isn't it? And maybe that's why he hasn't been called up yet. I think people have been predicting him getting called up to the main roster for about a year now. And I think if you're looking for a reason why he hasn't, I think it's kind of what everybody's saying is that, that there's still that something missing that he needs to be in NXT working on.
Yeah, the more I think about it, I think that's the case. And I mean, you know, I'm on PWT Talks NXT. We've been talking about him going up the main roster for maybe not necessarily a year, but I know we've been talking about it for a while. Granted, time has been really weird in the COVID era, so maybe it's been a year. Who knows? I think you're right. I mean, if he goes up to the main roster and in this current incarnation, he's going to get eaten alive. People aren't going to get behind him, and they're going to have to go a different direction with him pretty quick. So, you know, we'll see. I think the more I think about it, we'll probably see him in NXT for, I don't know, maybe at least another 6 months, if not a year or so, to kind of flesh it out and figure that out. Granted, they may wind up calling him up sooner than that too. You know, they may think he's ready. You know, he's kind of your typical WWE babyface. You know, a little bland. I mean, like John Cena was a little bit bland. Roman Reigns was a little bit bland when they were trying to push him as a babyface. So they may call him up before he's, you know, before he finds whatever that is. But I hope they realize that. And I kind of hope that him being out in front of this large crowd was another sign that, you know, he didn't get the pop that they're probably expecting. So I'm kind of hoping that they see that as another sign that, you know, he needs something. He needs a little bit of work. He needs a little tweak to really resonate and connect with the audience. I want to like the guy. Like, I feel like he has he's got the it factor. He has those three things you need to be a wrestler. He's got the look. He can go in the ring, and you know, he can sort of talk on the mic. It's not great, but it's, if you like a Steiner style promo, then it's not bad. So there's that. You know, I can see him developing into a main event talent, but he really needs to find whatever it is that he needs to find to connect with everybody.
We've got, as I said at the top, well, quite a few emails, more so than usual. A lot about the Royal Rumble and a lot about the Bloodline. So let's try to separate these out here. We've got two Royal Rumble questions that we'll get to. One is, let's see here, where am I? Okay. One is from Joshua from Texas. He says, "Hello, Greg. This is just a follow-up after listening to the Royal Rumble show. The one big takeaway I had that differed with the first on-site correspondent was the Bray match. I was in the building, and the downtime between the Royal Rumble and the Pitch Black match really brought the crowd down. The video segment seemed longer than the match. Aesthetically, it looked cool, but fans in the building couldn't see much. Bray only had paint that showed up in the dark with no part of his outfit having glowing parts, so it was hard to see what he was doing. His paint looked cool, but it was only visible on the video screens. Crowd was pretty dead the whole match. Uncle Howdy clearly missed LA Knight on the elbow drop, and we could only see the spot from the video boards. Once again, with a Bray match, it's just a bunch of fluff with no real substance. Boring. That match really didn't help the Bianca-Alexa match, as it totally brought the crowd down, which continued through the Women's Royal Rumble. Fans didn't perk back up until Roman and KO." So for the Rumble, Nate, you know, we had the Pitch Black match, which I termed it in my roundtable review in the Torch newsletter, basically what you'd expect from a match that you really had no idea what was going to happen in, you know. And then you had very little follow-up on SmackDown. I think you had just a very short video with Bray Wyatt and Uncle Howdy, who now seem to be in cahoots. I don't know if you had opportunity to see that match at the Royal Rumble, but what did you think about the uniqueness of it anyway?
So I haven't seen SmackDown, but I have seen it's still on my DVR, but I have seen the Royal Rumble. It was pretty much exactly what I expected it to be. I wasn't really sure, I didn't think there was necessarily going to be like glowing paint or, you know, the presentation isn't necessarily exactly what I thought it was going to be, but I knew it was going to be super gimmicky, a little over the top, and probably not good. And that's kind of how I felt about the match. It was there. I'm a huge fan of LA Knight. I'm a big fan of Bray Wyatt. So I was hoping that there was going to be a little bit more substance to this, but even as a fan watching from home, I also felt that the video package leading up to that was longer than the match. I think it probably was. And I remember thinking to myself watching the match, like, that's it. Like, they've been hyping this for so long. It's a sponsored match, like the Mountain Dew Pitch Black match. I figured there'd be a bit more to it. And I also had the same, and actually that's the first feedback I've heard from in the building, but that was one of the things I was thinking even just watching. I'm like, this has got to be so hard to see in the building. Like, you have to watch the video screens for this. I don't think it was really a huge, huge success. As far as like the angle and everything goes, it's, you know, like I said, I didn't quite see what happened on SmackDown, so I can't really comment on that. Curious to see. Actually, I'm really curious to see what happens there. So I'm not going to comment too much more on it because I don't want spoilers. I've avoided them so far.
Fair enough. Our second Royal Rumble follow-up question goes, hello, Greg. I'm emailing this after listening to post-Rumble show. Wanted to share my thoughts as well as get your take on the world title picture. First, I didn't enjoy the pay-per-view as I felt everything seemed as a foregone conclusion, which disappointed me as the Rumble is my favorite pay-per-view. Haven't enjoyed Triple H's run, but understand I'm not his target audience. As for the world title picture, I don't see a way WWE doesn't upset their fan base. You give Sammy the title win, then Cody becomes another Rumble winner who doesn't win at Mania. The Cody win, while paying off his reason for returning, upsets the non-payoff of Sammy and the Bloodline. What do you think of WWE going the route of creating a Raw Championship and having the winner of it defend against Cody while you still do Sammy and Reigns? Both guys get their moment and can embrace the end of Mania, raising their respective titles. Do you think that works? Interested in your thoughts. Thanks for taking my email. So, yeah, I thought Rumble was good, but I was not as effusive in my praise as the others who were in the Torch roundtable in the latest newsletter. I think I was more with Todd Martin in the VIP roundtable that he did with Wade and Kelly Wells after the show. But I thought it was decent. You know, that email was written, by the way, last Monday, so that was before all the fallout and before SmackDown happened with Sammy and Roman, and I won't get too much into it because I know you haven't seen it yet, but it doesn't seem like right now they're going to do a split title. That was a big discussion point for me and Rich on the flagship this past week, as well as even last week on the Royal Rumble post show. Do you think that would be, and I think that the emailer brings up a good point, that somebody's going to be disappointed here. And it's probably going to be the Sami Zayn fans because, you know, WWE doesn't probably see Sami Zayn in the same light that they see Cody Rhodes. But is there a half measure here where Roman's got two titles? You know, do you create another championship to give, okay, Roman's title and then another title to be defended on Raw? Do you split Roman's titles as the WWE and Universal, which is what it was originally, and have him, you know, wrestle two times at WrestleMania, which, again, right now doesn't seem to be the direction. Do you think that would be a viable solution, or do you think they just need to bite the bullet and go with one over the other?
I think they need to do something because, you know, where I love the whole Bloodline storyline, Roman Reigns being the tribal chief and holding both titles and, you know, just the visual of him holding the titles, like, that hasn't gotten stale for me. I know some people have started to talk about that. I really like the angle and everything. But you now leave one show without a champion, you know. It's like when Brock Lesnar held, you know, I think it was even before they had split the titles, and Brock Lesnar had the WWE championship for like a year and he was off TV for the most part. You know, it did elevate the other titles a little bit, like the Intercontinental US title a hair, but, you know, you're still missing that champion on your show. I don't know, like there's part of me that thinks like creating a Raw championship could work. But then what do you do with Roman's, you know, the Undisputed Championship? Do you, you know, merge them together and have one belt? Do they end up splitting? And then, you know, does the Raw Championship get dissolved or merged into one of them? It gets a little I don't know, it can get a little bit confusing, I think, if they were to create a championship. It could work. I think it could work, but they'd need to kind of tread carefully with how they booked it. I'm more in favor of something along the lines of, like, you know, at WrestleMania, there's like a 2 out of 3 falls match or something, or maybe not 2 out of 3 falls, but like a match. Yeah, maybe like it's a triple threat where there's 2 falls, and, you know, if Sammy wins, you know, Sammy pins, gets the win on one, and Cody gets the win on the other. That could be something that pleases everybody, but I don't think that's the direction they're going either. Like you said, I think it's the Sami Zayn fans that are going to wind up getting a bit disappointed. You know, you're going to have your moment with Sammy getting his shot against Roman, but he's not going to win the title. It's not going to happen. And I think there's multiple reasons for that. The Saudi Arabian deal, you know, he can't go to Saudi Arabia, and I don't think he wants to go to Saudi Arabia. So they're not going to put the title on him, because obviously they're for, you know, Crown Jewel, Super Showdown, whatever the next Saudi Arabia show is. Yeah, they're going to want the champion, or all of the champions on the show, I'm sure. So I think having Sammy in that spot is going to be kind of difficult for the company. So I feel like that in and of itself is going to hinder Sammy and any like championship sites he might have.
All right, let's go back to the phones. The 615 area code, Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, welcome to the show tonight.
Greg, it's just, every Sunday I'm like, I got to find a way to get on the show. I just, you know, Greg, you're the man. What can I say? But Nate, dude, I'm glad to talk to NXT with you, man, because I don't get to call you guys on Tuesdays much anymore. So how are you doing, man? Good to talk to you.
Doing good, man. Definitely good to hear from you. It's been a little bit.
Yeah, so I guess I wanted to bring up NXT, and I wanted to go back to, you know, what you guys – I know you guys have been talking about Braun a lot, and I'm going to pour on some of that with you guys. I mean, I'm totally with you on the fact that he is kind of – it's Reverend Keith. I appreciate, you know, talking to you, you know, hearing you as well, but, you know, boring. I don't know if he's boring to me, but, I mean, I'm with you. He's definitely stale, but the thing – I liked that NXT, especially when they were when he was in the Apollo Crews feud, I liked that they were at least trying to go to vignettes with him. Like, they were trying to do something to get you invested in him. I think NXT yeah. has tried to do that. I just think that he is just not doing well with it. I guess it was okay. The Apollo stuff was fine. Those couple of vignettes were okay. Like, I was like, well, maybe they're on the right track.
I liked those,
and then with
too.
The Grayson.
It almost, you know, it kind of humanized him, and because he's almost like a cartoon character, you know, and that's yep. when I think, I don't know if it, Nate, it was you who said, you know, if he had been in the 80s and 90s, he would have been perfect. You know, that was the right. cartoon era of professional wrestling, at least in the WWF. But I mean, the way he grunts and the way he talks and, you know, just his whole demeanor is very cartoonish. And I think those vignettes tried to humanize him a little bit. And I honestly think he did well in them. I think we just need to see more of it. It really is what we need.
Yeah.
No, 100%. 100%. You know, in on PWT Talks NXT, you know, we were pretty high on those vignettes as well. Some of them were a little weird. You know, like I remember in particular the sitting down at the diner. Just it seemed that whole interaction back and forth with them. It seemed, and I remember at the time saying it seemed like it was a high schooler that filmed it. It was just the production value there was like not out of something NXT produced. But but other than that, you know, we were pretty high on it. So I think they did try it. And they were kind of giving us some of that a little bit here with Grayson Waller and the feud, you know, because he was – and he brought it up in I think it was the video package leading up to the match at Vengeance Day. Braun Breaker's like, you know, I came in hot and heavy. I have my temper getting the best of me. And, you know, now I've got these mind games I'm dealing with. And obviously I'm paraphrasing. But, you know, mind games I'm dealing with. And, I've got to, you know, keep my cool. But once I get him in the cage, I can unleash the beast again. So we kind of got a little bit of, like, character development, but it was, like, a very, very, very little bit. I applaud them for trying, but I they need to do something that's a little bit more, tangible. It certainly humanized him, but they got to give us a little bit more something. I'm not sure what it is, but they got to do something to get us a little more invested in him.
All right. Sorry, Sean, I hijacked your point there. Go ahead and continue on.
No, you're fine. No, I'm glad you kind of elaborated more on that. And that's what I think is kind of hard, because I think NXT's done a good job of trying to do something different. It's just Braun just – and I wanted to go back to the match itself, because I wanted to ask a question. Did you guys hear – was it me or when Grayson at one point went up to the top rope, was he calling a spot? Because I was like, oh, my gosh, it sounded so loud. Like, I think he was like, you're fine, or telling Braun to, like, stay where he was or something. Did I catch that? Was he calling a spot? Because I usually don't hear that kind of stuff a lot of times. I know they called Cena out for doing that a lot in a lot of his matches, which I've gone back. I'm like, oh, gosh, yeah, that was kind of, you know, you kind of see it after a while, you know, going back and looking. But did Grayson call that? Was that what it was? Because that was just like...
I don't know. I didn't notice that. But the one thing I would caution about that is Grayson Waller is also a trash talker in the ring during his matches. So... sometimes it's
right.
hard to parse what is trash talk from especially Grayson Waller and what is spot calling. So Nate, I don't know if you have any more clarification on that.
I don't. I'm not sure exactly what the spot was you're talking about. That's actually kind of what I was going to say. Is, you know, Grayson Waller is certainly a trash talk in the ring. You know, he takes that Kevin Owens school of thought, and he's always talking when he's in the ring. It's hard to say. It's hard to say. He could have been calling a spot, but yeah, I don't really know for sure.
But going back to the match, I just wanted to ask you guys, that's what I haven't liked about Braun, is he's getting to be, in my estimation, watching his matches now more and more, is going back to the Roman Reigns babyface is why he wasn't, you know, people didn't like him. It's because Braun's got a clothesline, a spear, and a power slam. There's not much else there other than him trying to sell a lot. And he sells okay. I mean, he's not bad at selling, but... there's a lot of the guys are keeping the movement going for him. And so I wanted to hear what you guys thought about that. Cause that's what's, I think, getting me down about him in the ring. It's just, there's not a lot to it other than the three main moves that he has.
It's important to remember that he's still relatively young in his wrestling development. Mm-hmm. Would you like to see more development at this point, especially for someone who's on TV as frequently as he is? Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism. I think Braun Breaker has gotten really good at the three-star match, you know, but if you want to be a main eventer at the main roster level, you got to be able to bring it at a higher level against certain opponents. And I think whenever he faces Carmelo Hayes, that's going to be the real test, because we've seen that Carmelo Hayes can put together matches at a higher level than that and be involved in matches at a higher level than that. Can Braun raise his game enough to where he can break out of that sort of three-star match rut? And so that's what I'm really interested in. That's when you know, to me, that he's going to take that next step and be main roster ready. Nate, I'll let you chime in on that as well.
Yeah, it's – I think with Braun Breaker, he's – Carmelo Hayes is definitely going to be kind of that litmus test for him. The stereotypical like WWE babyface. I mean, how many babyfaces we have? We had, you know, John Cena with the five moves of doom. You know, Roman Reigns. He had, you know, the Superman punch and the spear and all of that. Brock Lesnar. I mean, you know, it can certainly work. But for some reason I agree. I don't feel like it is working with Braun Breaker. Like it's. And I think it's because his character, like, itself is so two-dimensional. And then you just kind of see him do the same moves and have the same match kind of over and over. I wouldn't say the same match, but you know what I mean? That three-star match, as Greg brought up. I kind of like the way that you put it. So I think, you know, Carmelo Hayes is going to be that litmus test. He can go. Carmelo Hayes can go. He is I think he's absolutely phenomenal in the ring. You know, he's certainly got some more, you know, we can improve, but for where he is, for the level that he's at, you know, he's great. So to put the two of them in a title match together. You know, again, we've, you know, it, like Greg said earlier in the show, this isn't at, you know, new territory. We have seen them wrestle before, but I feel like at Stand and Deliver, it's going to be a big crowd, you know, a lot of pressure. They're going to want to pull out all the stops. I'm curious to see how it all pans out. You know, is Carmelo Hayes going to be, you know, like you said, Sean, you know, kind of providing all of the momentum for the offense and all of that, which kind of makes sense considering his ring style. You know, or are we going to see a little bit of a change out of Bron Breakker? I kind of don't think so. Yeah, I think it's kind of going to be more of the former there. So, regardless, I am looking forward to the match because hopefully we'll see the end to Bron Breakker's reign.
Anything else for us tonight, Sean?
Yeah, first I just wanted to bring up one quick thing, and Reverend Keith he'll laugh at this. He'll let me say this, but he actually messaged me saying, "Please admit that Bron is boring."
That was hilarious.
I don't think he's that boring. I just think he's, you know, there's things about him I don't like. But going back to Grayson Waller, I just want to bring this up real fast. Is I think he's got a higher ceiling than you guys do. I've told Gray I'm a little higher on him. I think Grayson's got a very high ceiling. I think he's really good in the ring. I think he's, because he's so charismatic, I think there's a lot of high ceilings for him whenever he does go to the main roster. I think there's something there with him. Like I do Carmelo, I think there's a lot of good talent in NXT going up that will go up to the main roster and I think can make big waves, and Carmelo is obviously one of those guys. But my two questions were, going back to the women's match, the one thing I didn't like about the build to this match with Roxanne and Toxic Attraction was that, you know, the so-called dissension between those two, you know, made Roxanne look stupid because, like Todd said, like, you know, they're not going to, going up to the match, you know, they're not going to turn on each other. Like, that's just dumb. Like, for Roxanne to think that they're going to turn on each other just makes her look really bad. And then them to, you know, just do what they did, you know, in the contract signing or whatever that was when they put her through the table, it just makes Roxanne look kind of, I don't know. I don't like when they do that. So I didn't like the build to the match very much. I love Roxanne. I think she had a good match with them. She made it as good as she could have because she's so good in the ring. So my question was, you know, what do you think of that? And then as far as her next opponent, I know there's a lot of options out there, but I'm thinking maybe have somebody like, if you want to, knowing that Tiffany Stratton's back, you want to, I don't know if she's ready for that kind of a spot yet, but maybe somebody like her, because I think Zoe Stark is the next one that could take the title maybe off of her, but I don't know if you want to push Zoe, like, you know, right there that fast. So do you think it's Zoe or Tiffany, or where do you think they'll go with Roxanne as her next challenger?
I could see Zoe Stark. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think she would present probably the toughest challenge to Roxanne Perez, and I think you want that at Stand and Deliver, at that big show. It's kind of the opposite, Nate, of the men's division, where you really don't know, you know, we know Carmelo Hayes, but if we didn't know that, it would be a real struggle to see where that next challenger is going to come from. Whereas for the women, it seems like there's no shortage of potential challengers. And then, you know, I agree. I think the buildup, you know, the buildup felt very short, I guess is what I would say. Like, it didn't seem like they gave a lot of time for the build, and I think they really could have, had they had, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks to really build this triple threat in the women's title match, I think they could have done a lot more to sow dissension or to do things to make Roxanne legitimately believe that Gigi and JC were going to potentially break up instead of the old baby faces stupid trope. Nate, any of that, the next challenger for Roxanne and just sort of the build-up to that match that we saw on Saturday?
Yeah, so the build coming up to the match, I agree. I think they probably could have done a little bit more to make it seem a little less predictable, I guess, that, you know, we were going to see what we actually saw. Like I said, where everything just seems so predictable, it's hard for me to really even get invested in the storyline. They definitely could have gone about it a different way to kind of get us, you know, get us more invested. As far as like the next challenger, Zoe Stark is certainly somebody that I would love to see, you know, in contention for the women's title. I think she's believable. She's been on like ever since turning heel, she has just so completely embraced that character. You know, from the way she moves in the ring, just her attitude, her facial expressions, everything. So I think Zoe would make a great heel there. There's also, and this is a weird one, but I'm going to throw it out there. Mako Satomura. What happened to Mako Satomura? She's on the roster, and we haven't seen her since they retired the UK title. You know, they could certainly have her debut as some, you know, like the final boss of NXT almost, you know, and she doesn't even have to have any sort of alignment. Just the fact that she's Mako Satomura, you know, they could certainly do something like that. That's, you know, something we've brought up a couple times on PWT Talks NXT. Tiffany Stratton, I don't know if she's necessarily the one to take the title off of Roxanne Perez, but I think there's definitely a feud and a match there. And I'd actually be very interested to see it. I think the two of them could have a great match together. Especially we have both of them have very flashy finishes and kind of flashy in ring styles. So I think that could be really, you know, really good. And another one that I'm going to say, but I hate myself for saying it, is Nikita Lyons. I do not think she's there by any stretch of the imagination. But it's very clear the company is still high on her. They gave her a very prominent vignette last night at Vengeance Day. You know, she's in a prominent angle right now, injury angle, like a whodunit. Rikishi is going to come out actually at the end of it and say it was him. if Solo Sikoa was still in there, maybe, but you know, but yeah, so I think Nikita Lyons is also somebody that we should be talking about. I really hope that's not the case. She is, I am not a huge fan of hers, but it could happen.
Yeah. Anything else for us, Sean?
Yeah, just one last question, and then I'll let you all go. Going back to, because I'm glad, man, Nate, I'm glad you said you hadn't watched SmackDown yet, because I was going to ask a question about something that, you know, like actually happened, and I was like, oh, I'm glad you said that, because I did not want to take anything away
feel free.
From SmackDown.
Feel free.
No,
okay.
I don't want to do
that's
that,
fine.
Dude. No, I wouldn't do that to you. But I'll say there, okay, so there is a, okay, there's this two-part question. What do you guys think about, see, I've been on the way of, I was rooting for Rhea to actually challenge Charlotte. I mean, everybody was just assuming she was going to do Bianca, which would have been fine. They're both on Raw. It makes a lot of sense. But I think Bianca and Charlotte are both cold in different ways. Charlotte, just because she's a babyface and she's not very good at that, and so far I haven't seen anything to tell me she's not or that she's going to get any better as a babyface. I don't really see it so far. And with Bianca, she just seems cold, but – so what do you guys think about Rhea challenging Charlotte? And then the other question I was going to kind of ask, too, was basically on SmackDown, they were going to have a fatal four-way match for the women, which I feel like WWE with the women's division in general, I feel like it's more with the women's division. They do so many fatal four-ways. They want to put a bunch of women in a match and just say, let's go have this quick match. That is the one thing with them that kind of frustrates me is they just don't build these women up at all. They just put them in a match and put them together. Nobody gets over. There's nothing special about any of them. So I wanted to hear what you think of the fatal four-way matches. Are they just overdoing them with the women in general? And what do you think about Rhea challenging Charlotte? And that's all I had. Greg, I always appreciate what you do. Nate, it's always good to talk to you, man. Thank you guys for taking my call, as always.
All right. Thanks, Sean. Good to hear from you. Rich and I talked about this on the flagship as far as Rhea's decision to choose to face Charlotte. And my take on it was there was really no wrong answer here. Rhea and Bianca had been teased a little bit at times, and I think it would be a really good match. And then, of course, Rhea and Charlotte have the history together. So I don't think there was a wrong decision. I'm fine with where they ended up. My concern is for Bianca to make sure that she has something worthwhile to do because I do think she is a star. And I think the Alexa feud brought her down quite a bit. The four ways I hadn't noticed as much, I guess, as Sean, so it hasn't stuck in my craw as much. But I will say, to his point about nobody coming across as a star, I think you saw that at the Royal Rumble, Nate, where – you know, until Becky Lynch came out and the crowd came unglued, nobody really got any kind of major pop or major reaction. I mean, Becky Lynch was the first one that got that sort of reaction. So that tells you that even though the women's divisions on the main roster are deeper, it's not necessarily deeper in that the women are more over or there's bigger stars in the division. It's just deeper in terms of numbers. And hopefully there's a mechanism to go about fixing that, because there are a lot of talented women who just don't really seem to be over that much.
Yeah, that's a very good point. The Royal Rumble was very telling. You know, Becky was really the only one that got the massive pop. I know I certainly, for one, popped when Michelle McCool just jumped over the barricade and jumped into the Royal Rumble. I really like that. I don't know if most people did or not, but I thought that was great. I think you bring up a lot of valid points. The women's division is, it does feel a little stale at times. With Bianca Belair, like you said, she's a very absolutely talented superstar. Huge in the, she loves being the, role model for, kids and other, minorities and things like that. So, I mean, she's going to have a job with WWE, I think, as long as she wants to. Definitely a good hand to have there. I think you're also right. No real wrong decision with Rhea Ripley's pick. I think Charlotte does make more sense to me anyway, with the history that they have there. Plus, a lot of that took place in NXT. And so I'm a little bit biased, but whatever. But I like the fact they're kind of calling back to that. And, Rhea came out, I think it was on Raw. Rhea came out and she talked about, the feud in NXT and Charlotte, I think Charlotte beating her for the title and everything like that. I kind of like it. I'm curious to see how this winds up playing out, especially roles reversed. Rhea was the babyface then, Charlotte was the heel. I like Charlotte better as a heel, but I like Ripley more as a heel. So I'm curious to see how Charlotte winds up playing with Rhea at WrestleMania. But I am definitely looking forward to this match. I'm a huge Rhea Ripley fan. I love the fact that she's in the spot that she is. She's one of the more popular people, I think, on the card. All of my friends, well, I say all of my friends that are into wrestling, like I have a ton of them. But at least the three or four of them that I do have that are into wrestling, casually into wrestling, they're all talking about the Dominic and Rey storyline, Rhea storyline, not Rey, Dominic and Rhea storyline. I think it's a good match to have. Charlotte obviously has that name value too, so yeah, I think it could definitely be a draw.
We'll close out the show with a few emails all about the Bloodline. This is from Josh, a longtime fan in Scotland. He says, "Hi, Greg. Sorry this isn't about NXT tonight, but I had to get this off my chest. There's a huge thing not being talked about with Sammy, and I hate to have noticed it as it has taken me out of the storytelling completely. No matter how good Sammy is or how hot he is with WWE under the control of Vince, he will never be allowed to be champion because of one thing, Saudi Arabia. With Sammy not being allowed / choosing not to compete at the Saudi shows, WWE would not have him as champion during a period they have a show there. I can't remember the source, but I'm sure it was said the reason Aleister Black did not compete in Saudi was due to the content of his tattoos, and wasn't it a surprise that Vince never really got behind him? I'm not a conspiracy nut, and I hate that I'm a fan who thinks this way, but it was the first thing to go through my mind when the rumored takeover was muted a few weeks ago that Sammy's push would be stalled. I've not heard this talked about anywhere so far and just wondered your thoughts and maybe talked me down from this. Thanks for the hard work and the great show." Thanks for emailing us, John. Really appreciate it. I think someone, I don't know if it was you, Nate, or someone else earlier who mentioned Sammy Saudi Arabia. Yeah, so is there, I guess, like, you could always do a short title reign where he wins it for a month and so that, it doesn't interfere. They do two Saudi shows a year. So, you could have a several-month reign where it doesn't interfere with the Saudi shows necessarily. But you could also do a situation where you don't have the champion go to Saudi Arabia, that maybe it's an injury angle or something like that. and you maybe make up for it by having a big star like a Logan Paul go over there, or a Tyson Fury go over there again, or somebody like that. Are these legitimate ways you think they could book around Sammy not being able to go to Saudi Arabia?
I mean, oh yeah, absolutely. There are certainly ways they could book around it. I just don't know if they will. Especially lately, they like kind of this long-term storytelling with the title. We've seen long reigns with, you know, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns. We haven't seen a whole, I got to think about that. Have we seen, any real transitional champions? Not really, since like Brock won it off of Kofi, really. I think that's right. Maybe Goldberg with a random reign or something in there. But I don't know. I kind of feel like they could certainly go that way, but I just totally lost my train of thought. So I apologize, but you know, that happens to me sometimes. What were we talking about? Wow. Like it just completely escaped my brain.
Zane,
like
Saudi
ADD
Arabia,
moment. Sami Zayn, Saudi. Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
Yes. So, you know, they could certainly do something to book around it, but I'm not sure if they're necessarily going to go that way. You know, if they could do something, if it kind of played into their booking decisions for the title, long-term, have Sammy win it off of like Roman or something and, you know, kind of give him a token reign and then drop it back to Roman before one of the Saudi shows. Sure. But I think it certainly diminishes his odds of becoming a champion, becoming a either WWE or Universal Champion in WWE. You know, having the Intercontinental title off of a Saudi show probably isn't going to be a big deal to the Saudi, you know, to Saudi Prince there. But I think he's probably going to want to have the champions on both shows, or both champions on the shows is what I meant to say. I don't know. It's kind of weird territory. And I'm sure it's weird for Sammy too. Like I can't imagine kind of being in that spot where you're a big name in this company that also has a deal with this country that you're like so morally opposed to. It's gotta be such a weird spot for him too. I don't envy him, but yeah, like I said, I think it, at least in my view, I think it could damage his chances of becoming champion.
We go back to Eli in the second part of his email. He says, assuming Sammy and KO win the tag titles at Mania, and that's the payoff for their story, as I believe it is and should be, what's the follow-up? Their tag run opens up so many possibilities for matches, but it feels like the inevitable is coming. When they lose them, KO is going to turn, isn't he? And if he does, does that undermine all of Sammy's babyface heat and momentum? Does he look like a dumb babyface after all the abuse he suffered and finally broke away from back to his friend, who is destined to fight him forever? I don't necessarily know, Nate, that would be inevitable, that KO turns on Sammy after their story is over. I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves here with this. Like, there are so many twists and turns that could happen between now and then. I mean, we don't even know for sure that Sammy and KO are going to win the tag title, so I really wouldn't worry about that right now. You know, we can start talking about that at WrestleMania if Sammy and KO win the tag titles. We can start kind of plotting out their future together at that point, but we're still a ways away from that. So I hate to get too far down that road, but I mean, KO is kind of like that snake. I mean, he's like the scorpion and the frog, right? And he's the scorpion. So
yes.
It wouldn't surprise me to see it end that way, but I'm also enjoying babyface KO.
I absolutely love babyface KO right now. I mean, I feel like, you know, and not just because he uses the stunner, I feel like he's kind of the closest thing we've got to Stone Cold Steve Austin in this era right now. I also really gravitate towards KO too. And wrestlers kind of like KO, Mick Foley, for example, you know, that body type. It's like, you know, I've been a bigger dude my whole life. So it's really cool to see somebody like Kevin Owens get out there. Doesn't look, you know, like the conventional WWE body guy, but he's still one of the top names on the show. So love that. But you know, like you said, we're getting way ahead of ourselves kind of with this booking. But if that is the way that they go and KO and Sammy win the titles, which I hope that is the way they go, I absolutely could see him turning on Sammy. I mean, it happened in NXT. It's happened a few other times in WWE, if I'm remembering correctly. You know, obviously all of their history on the indies. So, and it's been a while since we've really seen Sammy and KO in a feud against one another. So, I mean, it might feel fresh again, especially where they're doing all of this stuff working together working together with the Bloodline. I don't know if it would damage Sammy necessarily. I'd have to really see like what was going on at the time, because I mean we're kind of talking, you know, potentially like two and a half, three months out. So I have to see what's going on then. But I don't know if it would necessarily hurt him. I think the two of them could be super entertaining, especially if they're given kind of free rein to do what, you know, kind of let them do what they want to do. I think they could have, you know, some, you know, some match of the year contenders even. That might be a little high praise there, but I think it's certainly something we could talk about.
And the final email, this is from Tim from Erie, Pennsylvania. He says, "Hey, Greg, I've been a huge fan of the Bloodline story over the last 2+ years. It's been great. But since mid-January, it seems this story is skipping chapters and trying to get to the end as fast as possible. I just don't buy what's been presented over the last few weeks. This should have been 4 to 5 weeks of content. I love Sammy, but from a storyline perspective, why does he deserve a title shot? If Chad Gable came out and attacked Roman, does he get a title shot? Why does WWE appear to be steamrolling through this story right now? Is it because The Rock won't be at WrestleMania? I'm sorry, Cody is a great story, but he does absolutely nothing for me as a WrestleMania headliner this year. I feel at this point Sammy gets screwed in Elimination Chamber and ends up in some tag match for the biggest show of the year. What are your thoughts? And thanks for everything. Go VIP." So first of all, it's been well established in WWE canon that, yes, simply attacking the champion can earn you a title shot. So Sami Zayn is perfectly in line for one. It's kind of funny to hear someone talk about how quickly they're moving through parts of a 2+ year story, 2.5 year story now. I mean, it's... I don't think that it doesn't feel like to me they're going fast through it. It says, "I just don't buy what's been presented over the last few weeks. This should have been 4 to 5 weeks of content." So I don't know where specifically, without, you know, knowing specifically what he's talking about in terms of the storyline, what he's referring to, but, you know, I think with Elimination Chamber being in Montreal, maybe they speed things up a little bit and have, you know, from the it's a very short turnout. It's like 2 or 3 weeks from the Rumble to the Elimination Chamber. So, you know, if you wanted to do the Sammy turn at the Rumble, yeah, you have to quickly get into Sammy versus Roman in time to start building that match for Elimination Chamber. So I don't know if that's the part that maybe feels like it's going quickly, but that's just, you know, WWE is beholden to their pay-per-view schedule, and that's what's next.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I really don't feel like things have been moving too fast. I know, you know, plans have changed where, you know, the Samoan family couldn't make it to the show, to Raw, so they did change the plans, and that's when they did like that Sammy, you know what I'm talking about, the Sami Zayn interview there, where they kind of a trial. That's the word I was looking for. The trial segment. So I don't know if maybe that's, you know, it kind of, that seemed like it came out of left field or something to him or whatever, or a little, you know, discombobulated. I don't know, but to me, I haven't really seemed like, it doesn't seem like it's been moving fast or anything. I've actually really enjoyed what they've been doing with the storyline so far, you know, the past handful of weeks. So, I don't really know what it would be. Yeah.
I think it's going pretty well. Can't complain too much. All right.
No, not
Nate,
at all.
Thanks for hanging with us here. here tonight. Appreciate you coming in, giving your expertise in NXT, and we'll have you on again soon for sure.
No, I appreciate you. Appreciate you having me. It was a pleasure as always. Always a good time chatting with you and going over different things in wrestling.
All right. Thanks, Nate.
Thank you.
And I see that Brian, 31-year subscriber to the Torch, just popped up on our screen here as wanting to talk. So we'll get to him real quick here before we end things. Brian from Phoenix, Arizona. Always good to talk to you here on Wrestling Night in America.
Hey, Nate. I'm sorry. Hey, Greg. I'm sorry that I just missed Nate. And it's totally my fault that I thought I had pressed one and I didn't. I think I unpressed it and pressed it again. So I'll go ahead and make this really quick so you can have a really good night. I'm sorry I missed you, Nate. And, Nate, you're one of my heroes. That's an inside thing. He'll understand that. What I'll say really quick is that I was going to talk about Wesley and who did you and Nate think, Greg, would be his next challenger. I say hi to Reverend Keith, hi to Sean, and with Ryan, I'll go back to what Ryan asked about why did Hulk Hogan, why did the genius Lanny Poffo, rest in peace, beat Hulk Hogan? It was based off of a storyline where, remember, the genius was working with Mr. Perfect, Curt Hennig, and that was the famous storyline where Curt Hennig stole the WWF belt and then smashed it up. And that's led the feud, I believe, through the summer. I'm not sure what year that was. So that was the only reason why Genius got that win, was like a count-on win or whatever it was, or a disqualification. It was to drive that storyline. Again, the next part of that storyline was Mr. Perfect destroying the WWF belt, which transitioned to be the hardcore belt with the duct tape on it. So that's Ryan's question about Hogan versus Genius doing the
perfect
or Hogan
because that
losing
was
to Genius.
That was 1989. I just looked it up. So that was about a year or two before, I think maybe just a year before I started watching. So that would have been, just outside. I mean, I obviously know about things that happened before I started watching, but it's a lot easier to remember if you were watching when it happened. So that's why it was just outside my frame of reference there. So appreciate you clarifying that.
No, thank you. I'm pretty sure you're going to circle back around to it anyway. The last thing I'll bring up is Chase U. Like you were saying, Greg, and like Nate was talking about as well, I'm not sure how that would translate to the main roster, and maybe it doesn't need to translate to the main roster. Maybe it just needs to stay down there as being like the school within a school of being a performance center. Thea Hill is incredible with just her energy. I know she's, maybe 18, 19, maybe 19 years old, and maybe that's where all that energy comes from, but just her exuberance is just infectious. And I'm not an indie guy, even though I've been around Greg for a while, but, I knew that Andre Chase was one of the Bravado brothers out of North Carolina, so I know he's there probably as much as helping wrestle, but helping coach all these young wrestlers that are coming
sure.
to the Performance Center. And then also, I do have a Chase U shirt, and the last two WWE events that came to Phoenix, I've worn my Chase U shirt. They have the Go Home Raw before WrestleMania, so it's March the 27th. Raw will be here in Phoenix, and I'll wear my Chase U shirt for that as well. So I will go ahead and let you go because I know it's pretty late on the East Coast, Greg. Again, I apologize for just coming on the last minute. I should have made sure I had one press earlier. Again, Greg, I really appreciate all the hard work you're doing. Thanks a lot for having me on in this last minute.
Absolutely, Brian. Thanks for calling in. Really appreciate it. Yeah, to answer your Wesley question, that's going to be really interesting because he really showed out here. He's got some momentum now coming out of Vengeance Day. You want a strong opponent for him, probably for the WrestleMania weekend show that they do. And, is it someone like Apollo Crews, who, they've got some work to do to rebuild him up a little bit, I think. But he's someone who would have really good matches with Wesley. So that would be something I would be interested in. Just trying to look at the NXT roster here as to who might be. I mean, Axiom, he's been winning some lately. He's been put in prominent positions. So maybe he is someone they look at there. Grayson Waller, if he tumbles down the card a little bit from the main event, he could be somebody they look at. JD McDonagh, you could go to Tyler Bate. So there are a lot of guys in that kind of second tier right under the main event who may be candidates to face Lee for the North American title, and all the ones that I listed I think would be really good and really interesting matches. So he's a guy, like I said, with a lot of momentum coming out of Vengeance Day, and there are some really interesting options for him heading into Stand and Deliver WrestleMania weekend if that's the next big show that they do. Again, really appreciate everybody calling and emailing. Got a lot of emails this week. Was really nice. Hope you'll join us again next Sunday. Again, check out my Twitter page at Greg M. Parks. I'll have the details about the time change with the Super Bowl next Sunday. So we'll make sure to preview Elimination Chamber in full next Sunday. So thanks again for joining us, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.